Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I'm going to be archiving this on my website of www.angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. And our first guest today is a constitutional lawyer out of Kamloops, B.C. He's the president of the NHPPA, Natural Health Product Protection Association. He's also a champion of the people as he's used his voice and knowledge to speak out in numerous forums and radio shows, all in an effort to wake up as many of us Canadians into what is going on at this time within our nation. With that said, I'd like to introduce Sean Buckley. Hello, Sean.
Hello, how are you doing?
Well, thank you so much. Before we start talking about how dangerous that C6 would have been if it would have passed to the Canadian people, could you talk a little bit about your association you have at this time, you know, why it was formed and other people that are involved, the NHPPA?
Oh, certainly. I'd be glad to do that. So just so your listeners are aware, is the NHPPA is a fairly young organization. We've basically been in existence just a little over 2 years. And we only have one object. We're a not-for-profit organization, and our single object is to protect access to natural health products, which is what we focus on. We did get drawn into the Bill C-6 fight, which involves consumer products, just because it also involved Health Canada, and you know, our board thought that it would put natural health products at risk. But basically the reason we formed is that in 2004, the Government of Canada brought in new regulations that the effect is to basically take away the majority of our natural health products. And we're still in a transition period. But we saw the writing on the wall that a lot of products that people depend on for their health were going to be taken away without any real justification, and that the other organizations that basically should have been making sure this didn't happen were not. So we thought there was a need for an organization that could bring some special tools to the table to try and stop what's happening from happening. So that's why we came into existence.
And one of the things, I was watching a YouTube that you did, you were talking about how C6 would have abolished the trespassing law. Can you tell us what exactly is the trespassing, how it would have violated the trespassing law, and how long it's been involved within the Canadian history of Canada?
Oh, certainly, and that's a wonderful question. Now, so just to give your reader some context, is before the Prime Minister prorogued Parliament, the House of Commons had passed Bill C-6, which was the consumer product protection legislation that was going to give Health Canada really sweeping powers in the area of consumer products. And one of the things that it did is it exempted Health Canada inspectors from the law of trespass. Now, your listeners would have heard the term trespass before, but they probably fail to appreciate how fundamental trespass is to basically our, you know, the way we live our lives and interact vis-a-vis the state. And it all goes back to the English common law, where basically the state lost the right to come onto private property. So right now, for example, if a private citizen or a police officer comes onto your property and you tell them to leave, they have to leave. And if they don't leave, they can be charged criminally with trespass. You can also sue them civilly. And the courts in Canada so protect our right to private enjoyment of our own property that if you sue somebody for trespass, I think it's the only tort where you don't have to show you actually suffered damage. The courts will just assume you were damaged because your right to private enjoyment of your property was violated and award you damages. Now, along comes Bill C-6, and it exempts Health Canada inspectors from the law of trespass. So literally, you could be eating supper, and a Health Canada inspector could be standing in your flower bed looking through the window watching you, and if this legislation had passed, you would not have the right to tell the Health Canada inspector to leave, which is absolutely staggering. And they can't go into your house without a warrant, but certainly they can get a warrant in almost any situation, which is a separate issue I could discuss. but they can search any place other than your house. So they can search your garage, other outbuildings. They can be on your property to investigate your neighbors.
So even the people that have children, let's say a young child's taking a shower and Health Canada's looking through the window at the child, at your child. I mean, I look at that as peeping Tom, which is, in my mind, is not only immoral and should not happen. You know, the Health Canada, they could actually do something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean,
if it would have passed.
Yeah, I don't expect that to happen, you know, and Health Canada inspector to watch somebody showering. But, you know, we do have to ask the question. Like CSIS or the RCMP or, you know, the OPP or your Vancouver City Police, they can be investigating serious things like a murder or, you know, a terrorist plot, and they can't come into our property without a warrant if they're not invited. And they have to leave if they're told to leave unless they have a warrant. Why would we allow Health Canada inspectors in the area of consumer products, and we all have consumer products, to be able to enter our property, to be able to enter our businesses, to be able to enter any place at any time without a warrant and not and be immune from the law of trespass? When I was testifying in front of the Senate, I asked them the question. I said, are consumer products all of a sudden so dangerous in Canada that we have to give up a fundamental right such as the freedom to enjoy our property? Unless, you know, a court is granting the state the right to be there. And the obvious question is no. And if we allow Health Canada to do it, then, you know, mark my words, then another, you know, federal body will introduce legislation allowing them to do it and say, well, Health Canada can. And before you know it, you know, basically every investigative body of the state is going to be able to access our property without a warrant. This is a fundamental right. Excuse me. This is a right that defines Commonwealth countries.
Yeah, and also, when they passed the gun control legislation here in Canada, there was actually some videos out there of people who had weapons and were collecting collectors of weapons and stuff like that. There was agencies within Canada that were using the gun control to go after people. It's almost like they had a list of people to go after people. At the same time, we also have to remember the security certificate, which has been used to go after people, the immigrants that have immigrated here to Canada. And, you know, it's like a few people within the government have collected this list of people that they think are for some reason or another are part of this possible terrorist organization, and they're harassing innocent people.
Well, you're touching on something very important, because what you're doing is you're bringing up other examples where the state is being given more power vis-a-vis the citizen. And one of the points that I try to make when I lecture is basically the point you're making, is that in almost every area of our lives, laws and regulations are being passed giving the state more powers to stop us, more powers to search us, more powers to access our personal information, more powers to, you know, enter our homes and our cars. And basically we're losing our privacy and we're losing our freedoms. And in almost every area of our lives, behavior that we were free to do before is being criminalized. I mean, it's getting to be almost impossible to live a normal life without breaking laws in which if the state decided we could be punished. And it's becoming so complicated that I think the average citizen, I'm a lawyer, and I would even say the average lawyer, we cannot keep track of all the laws that we are subject to and actually live our lives without breaking law, because it's just gotten too complicated.
Well, what I'd like to know, recently, Homeland Security in the United States, they passed this law. Basically, what it said was all flights that originate from Canada, even if you pass over American airspace, you know, the list of people on the flight have to be handed over to Homeland Security, and then every single name on this list has to clear through their no-fly list, and if one name on there is on the no-fly list, they're not allowed to fly. Now, this is an aircraft that's originated from Canada and heading over to an international flight, not stopping off in the United States, but the United States is dictating the terms to a sovereign nation, which I don't like.
No, and, I mean, Canada is agreeing to these types of restrictions. So, you know, and part of the problem is we have been trained as a people to actually demand that the government intrudes into our lives. And we have been trained, whenever there is a safety concern, to actually demand that the government takes away our freedoms. And nobody is stepping back and asking, well, wait a second, aren't our freedoms something precious? Isn't our right to live without government intrusion into every area of our life something that we should cherish? And are we getting to a point where basically the state is just becoming so overbearing and so intrusive that we're losing a way of life that's precious? And I think people need to ask that question. I don't care how they answer it. But I think we need to become aware that every time we demand that the government take away our freedom in the name of safety, that we're losing freedoms.
Also, a long time ago, when the federal Liberals were in power, right after September 11th happened, they passed this one law, and it was called C-24, I think it was called. It was against organized criminals. And what it did was it allowed the police the right to break the law in order to arrest you. So you're looking at it going, the police are no better than the criminals, but yet they're enforcing the law. And that's, to me, that's hypocrisy at its worst-case scenario.
Yes, but what's interesting is those types of laws tend to be popular with people. And so as a populace, we tend to lose sight of the fact that, you know, if we authorize the police to basically do things that otherwise we'd consider illegal against, you know, this other group, so, you know, organized criminals or terrorists, then the state and the law officials become accustomed to those types of powers, and before long they're going to be used on you, and you will have no freedom, and you will have no privacy. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, during the Nazi era, well, you know, first they came, you know, for the communists, and then they came for the Jews, and the list goes on, you know, the gypsies, and then they came for me, and there was nobody to protest, right?
Yeah, the Enabling Act that they put forth that went after an awful lot of people.
Oh, yeah, no, and I mean, but as I say, it's part of this trend that you've identified, and it's always in the name of safety. So it's to protect us against crime, it's to protect us against terrorism. And, you know, I think a lot of Canadians, if they were asked, well, just wait, do you want the state to be watching all of your emails, to be watching your phone, to be able to, you know, to be watching you, to be able to search without a warrant? Do you want to sacrifice these freedoms? Is the risk of terrorism so high that you're willing to live that way? Or would you rather the state just use other investigative methods, even if they were less effective? And I'm not saying that they necessarily are less effective. And the sad part is if, you know, the police actually believed that something like a terrorist plot was going on, under the laws that existed prior, a court would certainly allow them to tap phones and put bugs in and things like that. We have a pretty good system that balances. State has a legitimate interest in preventing terrorist incidents and in investigating crime. But the citizens also have a interest in the state not intruding without court supervision and without, you know, a realistic respecting of our right to be left alone when we're not breaking the law.
Yeah, I spent a couple years in the United States. I was down in Las Vegas, Nevada, and that was where I started to learn an awful lot about Canadian history through my time in the United States, more than I learned when I was up here. So it's almost like there's some sort of censorship going on up here, not telling everyone about the history. And if it's not for radio shows, radio networks like Co-op Radio and all other alternative media, they're starting to tell people about what's going on. I wanted to quickly touch on this one subject. Recently, I was interviewing Dan Dix on April 12th, and I came across this one article where actually the federal government in 2003, indirectly, it signed away all of our rights to the Northwest Passageway, and also it signed away the rights to the Canadian Arctic. It's this United Nations agreement. What it basically states is that we're only allowed about 22.7 kilometers off the shoreline, which is ours. And then it also states that, you know, we can extend it further if we turn around and we could prove the continental shelf, you know, traces out even further out. Now, we're talking about islands within the Canadian Arctic that's, you know, 100 kilometers from the shore, mainland Canada. So at the same time, what happens is that Northwest Passageway has been signed off, and you know we're talking about the possibly one third of the oil left reserves left in the world is sitting underneath the Arctic. So we're talking anywhere from hundreds of billions to possibly trillions of dollars worth of material up there, which has now been given away from Canada. The question I have for you, if the Canadian people wanted to get together, because CBC brought this information out in an article in 2009, agreement signed in 2003, can the Canadian people join together in groups and launch lawsuits against the federal political parties that put forth these efforts to sell parts of Canada away from the Canadians and hold them legally and criminally and also financially responsible for their actions? Because if you turn against the Canadian people, as far as I'm concerned, that person is no longer a Canadian and is an act of treason against the Canadian people.
Yeah, no, that's actually a very interesting, you know, story and issue, and it's actually one I wasn't aware of, and I think I'll address your question in a couple of ways. Is, first of all, you know, when you're asking, can the citizens start a court action, you know, just off the top of my head, without actually looking into the issue and the jurisdiction in that, I can't really say yes or no, although, you know, when you look into these things, it's actually surprising, you know, what citizens can do in court in forcing the government, you know, to at least stay within the bounds of the Constitution. So it is likely that something could be done. Although one thing that I find very interesting is how vigorously the state resists court actions directed at kind of reining them in to act within the Constitution. And, you know, having been involved, and I'm currently involved in some actions with the government where we're trying to restrict, keep them within limits, constitutional limits. When a citizen sues the government over a dispute, the government actually works for the citizen too. And the government has all these resources and the citizen doesn't. And you would actually think that the Department of Justice would be told as a matter of policy that you make this as inexpensive and as easy for the citizen as possible. So, you know, concede issues where you should concede them, focus on what, you know, the real dispute is, and, you know, bear in mind that the government is also the government of the citizen, and if we're going to have rule of law, we have to settle disputes with our government through court systems if we can't resolve it by way of agreement. But what if you talk to other lawyers and other parties who are involved in suing the government, it's really the opposite. They make every single procedural motion they can. They grind you down financially and will not concede a thing. And in fact, some lawyers will not act against the government because it just leaves such a bad taste in their mouth. You know, basically you can, you know, sue private parties and their lawyers act reasonably, but as soon as you're against the government of Canada, as a matter of course, I would tell a client it's going to cost, you know, three or four times as if you were suing anyone else. It's going to be drawn out, and unless you have deep pockets, you can't do it. So it's just kind of interesting that, you know, we are supposed to have the rule of law, but it's very difficult in real terms for citizens to take the government to court, and only those with the deepest pockets can succeed.
And also, when you were doing an interview recently, and I had a chance to listen to it last night, Dan Town was interviewing you, you were talking about how Health Canada has turned around and made many of the supplements and vitamins that are available in health food stores. Do you think you're saying 60% of them were actually classified as illegal? Now, you also were talking about this heart drop you know, supplement that you could take that helps the heart heal the heart. At the same time, you know, if Health Canada gets away with the starting to make all these supplements illegal and starts not allowing them to be imported into Canada, you know, you're saying there's millions of Canadians right now that are taking supplements or taking vitamins, and it's helping them better than what the mainstream medicine has helped them over the years. Now, what happens if Canadians, they start, you know, going across the border and bringing this stuff across, even though the Health Canada is saying it's not allowed here, you know, could they actually in the future, if Health Canada gets away with all their actions, could they actually face time in jail and possible prison sentences for are for their actions of just bringing across supplements just to help them to survive?
Well, right now, that's, you know, I'm not anticipating the average citizen being charged. And right now, Health Canada does not have the authority to prevent a citizen from importing something that is not controlled. So obviously, you can't bring in heroin or cocaine or something that we've completely criminalized. So if a herb hasn't been completely criminalized, although it's not legally for sale in Canada, a citizen is usually allowed to bring in a personal supply, which Health Canada defines as 3 months. Now, a couple of years ago, the government tried to bring in Bill C-51, which, the way I read it, was going to give Health Canada the authority to prevent people from importing things that weren't approved by Health Canada for sale. So there's no question in my mind the government wants to criminalize that. But from a practical purpose, most of us do not have the time and resources to go to the United States or to go to another country to buy a, you know, maximum 3 month supply of something that we depend on for our health and be having to do that every 3 months. So practically speaking, right now the government is criminalizing, in the process of criminalizing, products that we have been free to take. So let me just put this in perspective for your listeners. Prior to 2004, if you walked into a health food store, except for, you know, your multivitamins, everything was illegal. The entire industry, and Health Canada estimated in 2003 we had up to 50,000 different natural health products in Canada. So this industry was unregulated. People weren't dying. People weren't being defrauded. There was no problem. In fact, the only problem was is Health Canada started to restrict access to these products by attacking manufacturers, saying, you're not licensed. You don't have a pre-approval to sell. Well, there was no pre-approval to sell because you couldn't get Health Canada pre-approval. The regulations were designed for chemical drugs, and plant-based products just simply couldn't get through the process. So the only problem was is Health Canada was restricting our access, and consumers rebelled. And I was told by a parliamentary aide that more Canadians signed the petition saying stop treating our natural health products as drugs than any other petition in Canadian history. And, you know, a lawsuit was started and the Canadian government backed down, referred the matter to the Standing Committee of Health, which I was told had the broadest consultations of any standing committee in Canadian history. They came out with recommendations basically acknowledging Canadians wanted increased access to these products. Health Canada agreed Canadians wanted increased access, and we get regulations that are drug-style regulations that deem our products to be illegal, and after a transition period, unless they're approved of by Health Canada, they have to be taken off the market. So in response to the largest Canadian citizen rebellion in our history for increased access, we get regulations that criminalize the entire industry. And when, you know, this basically washes through, I expect we'll lose north of 70% of the products we had access to before the regulations. Now, what's interesting is if you're like me and you say, well, wait a second, as consenting, competent adults, we should have the right to choose what goes into our bodies. I mean, we're not talking some dangerous chemical drug or some, you know, controlled substance. We're talking about herbs that are legal to buy as foods. And just because somebody with expertise, such as a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner or a naturopathic doctor or a herbalist, happens to take these ingredients because they can be used for health purposes, why would you criminalize them?
Also, so, I was watching, sorry for interrupting there, Sean. I was watching a program on W5. We only have about 2 minutes left till I have to go on to the next guest, but I wanted to quickly get to this question because it's extremely important. And what it was saying during this W5 show, it said there's a report published in 1999 that the BC Cancer Agency was paying about, you know, $400 a month for a supply of, now I'm hoping I get the enunciation of this word properly. I do apologize if I misenunciate it. I think it's thadomite. Within 6 years, the price soared to $3,600 per month. The question I have, in your opinion, how do we break the control of the pharmaceutical industry? Because what happens is this chemical right here, excuse me, this drug, what it's doing is it's basically breaking the our universal health care, because there's not only this is happening, other drugs are happening, you know, that are, you know, are costing 400 to 500%, 900% increase. So it's obviously that the pharmaceutical industry is trying to break our universal health care, where there's cures over in natural foods and natural supplements and vitamins, and that could probably do just as good as this pharmaceutical stuff. So how do we break the pharmaceutical industry's stronghold it now has in Canada?
Well, I mean, I think the citizens just have to get to the point where they say no to these regulations. It's like the seniors in Ashcroft who say, no, we're not going to send our recipes to Interior Health before we have a bake sale. We've had enough of you controlling our lives. I think we need to elect politicians that will say no to this regulatory scheme where all of our food is being funneled into only the big players, where we're losing control of our food supply, we're losing control of our medicine supply, and we're being funneled into this world where only large multinational corporations can sell us food and can determine what medicines we have. And we just have to collectively say no. We're not standing for this anymore. We want to be able to go to the farmer's market. We want to buy quality food from, you know, small players. And, you know, we're not going to accept over-regulation. It's quite funny because regulations come in as response to a legitimate safety concern, but then the big interests come in and they convince government to make it so onerous that only they can comply. It's called rent-seeking, and we're basically losing control, not just in the area of our food and our health, but in our other areas. But it's particularly troubling in the area of food and health when we lose our right to access things that we've traditionally enjoyed and rely on for our health.
Yeah, there's Benjamin Franklin, one of the quotes he used to say, and you know, if you give up a little bit of your liberties to gain security, well, you deserve neither. And that's what I support. To me, if you're going to give up your liberty, then you don't deserve the security, because what happens, all you're doing is you're giving it up and you're creating the big brother society. And what happens is government has no right in the bedroom of the citizens, as Pierre Elliott Trudeau said. And when, at the same time, government is only supposed to be there by the people. The people are supposed to be the government. That's what it comes down to. We only have about 30 seconds left, Sean. Could you leave us with some last-minute words and what your website is again, so that way people can go check it?
Oh, yes. Actually,
send you an email off if they have anything else to ask you.
Okay. So our website is www.nhppa.org, and it'll also link you to another website such as our Charter of Health Freedom site. I certainly invite your guests. We've got lots of YouTube videos, we've got our Senate testimony, things like that on there, and we definitely would love to get your email address so that, you know, when we need letters written, when we need calls made, when we need petitions signed and things like that, as we try to stop this government intrusion, we need a very contact base. So certainly would appreciate your listeners logging in and checking us out.
Well, thank you very much there, Sean. That's Sean Buckley, who's a Canadian constitutional lawyer. He's also the president of the NHPPA, and he's out of Kamloops here of British Columbia. Also on your website, Sean, I wanted to quickly say that you have your three-part plan on there too. We didn't have a chance to get into that, but hopefully we'll get you back on in the future, and we'll get into that and numerous other topics. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. Thank you again, Sean, for coming on.
Thanks, Reginald.
And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, throw on a PA, and then we'll come back with our next guest.